Hey, chapter 45 in Sefer Sheni of Tehillim, and we are still in the series of Kapitulach that the B'nai Korach wrote, that the sons of Korach wrote, and to refresh our memory, the sons of Korach actually did Teshuvah, and when the ground opened up, they were caught on a ledge, and the B'nai Korach actually lived, and the B'nai Korach did Teshuvah and became ardent B'nai Tyre. So there's a series of Kapitulach that were written by the B'nai Korach with Ruach HaKodesh, that they were Zaycha when they were saved on the ledge, that they received Nevuah and Ruach HaKodesh, and they saw a number of things in Klal Yisrael's future, and they wrote these series of Kapitulach about them, and David HaMelech arranged them, if you will, and included them in Sefer Tehillim. Now the B'nai Korach started their first stirrings of Teshuvah when Moshe Rabbeinu came to their tent. And they had a dilemma as follows. If they stand up for Moshe Rabbeinu, it would be like they were taking sides against their father, Mr. Korach. On the other hand, if they didn't stand up for Moshe Rabbeinu, it would be an insult Talmid HaChachamim, right? They stood up. And when they stood up and they chose giving respect to a Talmid Chacham over their father, they started doing Teshuvah, and that culminated when they did complete Teshuvah. So Korach's sons wrote this kapitel in honor, according to Rashi, of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Sanhedrin, and Talmid HaChachamim. Now the Kapitel sounds very much like a celebration of love and marriage between two distinct personalities, and it's possible that when a king got married, they would recite this kapitel. And we'll see in the kapitel that things start off sometimes a little rough, and then as it goes on, it gets better and better, and that is, of course, just like a marriage. You start off with two distinct personalities, and hopefully the distinct personalities merge and merge together to become one unified entity. It's also true that the same thing often happens with great leaders. When we've studied David HaMelech's history, we see that his beginnings were not very successful. Not everybody recognized him. They vilified him. They didn't think he was worthy to be the Melech. Only in the end did he prove successful and became the Melech recognized by everyone. The same thing with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu came and said to the Yidden, "Hey, let's go." And they said, "Ah! Are you kidding?" So oftentimes great leaders have a very difficult beginning before their greatness is recognized. So too, Chesed Chazal will Mashiach be. But Mashiach will also struggle in the beginning before being recognized for the great leader that he will be. On a more cerebral note, it seems to be that when you look at a person, you see the physical aspects of a person's body, the more coarse, the more gashmiest part. And only afterwards do you become aware of the nefesh, that a person has a neshama, and that a person can be kadosh. So the B'nai Korach wrote this kapitel in tribute either to Talmid HaChachamim and or to this transformation from coarseness to refinement that comes with leaders, with marriage, and indeed with people themselves. And in fact, the Radak goes so far as to say the kapitel was actually dedicated to David himself. So with that, let's take a look at the first pasuk, shall we? First pasuk says, "Lamanatzeach al Shoshanim livnei Korach," for the conductor, which we've spoken about many times, on the Shoshanim, for the sons of the Korach. Now, the Shoshanim are usually translated as roses. Maskil, shir yedidos, a maskil, and a song of love or a song of endearment. Now, the Shoshanim is most likely a musical instrument, which in some way, shape, or form resembles a rose or a lily, and therefore is called Shoshanim. It's the name of the musical instrument. Rashi says it's not actually the name of a musical instrument. It's an allegorical way of referring to Talmid HaChamim, that they're like the petals of a rose. But even though they're all great, each one is distinct and individual and separate. However, most of the Mefarshim understand that there was an instrument that was named after Shoshanim, that would be called Shoshanim, and that that's what the song was meant to be played on. A maskil, it's a song of enlightenment. Nobody was became more enlightened than the B'nai Korach. They went from being the lowest of the low to the highest of the high. They went from rebelling against Hashem to being granted Nevuah and Ruach HaKadosh. And it's a Shir Yedidus, it's a song of love. So according to Rashi, who understands that we're talking about the Talmid HaChamim, it's a song of love for Talmid HaChamim. Other Mephorshim say it's a song of love for Mashiach, and that is dedicated to the love that they felt for David HaMelech and for his descendant, Melech HaMashiach. So it's a song for the conductor by a maskil, a song of love. Rachash libi, excited is my heart, Devar Taiv, with a good theme. Omer ani ma'asai lemelech, I say that my works are for a king. L'shonai e soifer mahir, and my tongue is like the pen of a scribe who is skilled. A rachash as a noun is a slithering reptile. This is the only time in the entire Tanakh the word is used as a verb. So while it's translated here as excited, it's an unusual word. It really means reptile-y slitheringness is my heart. What does that mean exactly? It means that this heart is like twittering. A reptile, when it moves, can't really take, like, they sort of like squiggles around. It like flitters around. So therefore, what the B'nai Korach are saying is that my heart is a stir. My heart is twittering. In fact, rather than excited, I would translate this as a stir, which I've seen translated before. My heart is a stir. Something has stirred up my heart. For they really can't speak. Right now they're sitting on a ledge, and the fires of Gehenna are below them. They feel a stirring in their heart that they want to express. So as they say, Rachash libi, my heart is astir. My works are for a king, for David HaMelech, and my tongue is like the pen of a skillful scribe. Now, what does that mean? The tongue is like a pen. What happens when you write something down? It becomes permanent. The Baal Kapitel is saying here that, you know what, my tongue is like a pen. When I write something down with my tongue, it shall be forever. Words uttered stay on record in Shemayim forever. You know, when someone says something when you're a kid, and you say, well, I take it back. You say, well, you can't take it back, because you said it. You can't take back words. How's that for an impression of a kid? So even though it's little kids arguing, it's true. You can't take back words. Everything a person says is recorded forever in Shemayim. Goes on to say, Yaf Yafisa B'nai Adam, you are more handsome than other men, Hutzat Chain B'Svoisecha, and charm is full upon your lips, Al Kain B'Rachacha Elokim Le'Olam, and therefore Hashem has blessed you for eternity. So whether that's referring to Mashiach or whether it's referring to Talmid HaChamim, you can see already the skilled words that the B'nai Korach are putting down here. Your charm is poured upon your lips, and Hashem has blessed you for eternity. Chagor charbecha, gird your sword al yarech, upon your thigh, giber chaydecha vehadarecha, and, strong one, your majesty and your splendor. Now, gird your sword. So what is that? All of a sudden we're talking about how beautiful the Talmid HaChamim, the Mashiach, is, and all of a sudden we're told to gird your sword. It's a very abrupt change. What does gird your sword mean? So if we're talking about Talmid HaChamim, it's what we call the Milchamta Shel Torah, the war of learning Torah. Learning Torah is called the Milchamta Shel Torah, Milchama of Torah. According to the idea that we're talking about Mashiach, what comes before Mashiach? Before the beauty upon your lips and the blessing for eternity comes the sword and the war of Gog and Magog. And when you gird your sword, you'll be displaying Hod v'Hadar. Hod refers to the internal, private glory or majesty that a person has, whereas Hadar is an external adornment. So we talk all the time about Hod v'Hadar. One is the internal majesty, and one is the external majesty. And according to the Mefarshim, who explained that this is talking about a real sword in the war of Gog and Magog, in the end, Mashiach will have Hod v'Hadar, both internal glory and external glory. And we'll see a little bit later, in a little bit more detail, what that's talking about. V'Hadarcha, and with your splendor, Tzalach Recha Val Devar Emes V'Anva Tzedek. And with your splendor, you'll overcome your rider for your enemies for the sake of truth, the anvat tzedek for humility and tzedek and righteousness, the sorcha, and you'll be guided, naras yaminecha, to awesome deeds by your right hand. We just fought a huge war, now we're humble. Referring here to David HaMelech and to Talmid HaChachamim and to Mashiach that have an incredible contradictory attribute. We take it for granted that a king, David HaMelech, is a humble person. You certainly wouldn't expect that a big tzaddik, tremendous tzaddik who became a melech, would be a braggart, would you? But that's exactly what a king used to be. You didn't get to be Ahasuerus, king of 120 provinces, by saying, well, I might be good enough, I'm not really sure. Kings were notorious braggarts and blowhards. And it's an incredible contradiction that the Torah introduced into the world, that a person can be great and a person can be humble at the same time. Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest Navi ever and the most humble. David HaMelech was a humble person. A humble person, let's think of David HaMelech's day. He gets up in the morning. Do you think he has to wait for his alarm clock to ring? Or do you think perhaps one of his retinue comes in to awaken him and bows and puts his face on the floor and says, O great Melech, it is perhaps time for you to arise. Then David HaMelech gets up. Well, actually, he's probably already been up, but I'm just using this as a muscle here. And he has to, when he davens, do you think that he has to find a seat in the back somewhere and hopefully squish in? Or do you think maybe he has a nice seat up front? When he gets his hair cut, do you think maybe he has to call over to Ross's barbershop and hope that Joe can squeeze him in? Or do you think maybe everybody gets out of the way and the barber rushes over to him? Then he has to go out to have a meeting at the offices of the Sanhedrin. Do you think he hopes he can grab a cab? Or do you think he has an entire fleet of horses pull up? He carries his Sefer Torah with him, and they put on all of the official Malchus clothes, and the whole retinue goes out and travels the 6 blocks to the Sanhedrin. All that, and it's only 9 a.m. Pretty hard to be humble. But one of the things that Hashem's justice and Hashem's righteousness introduced to the world of the Torah is the fact that Anva Tzedek, a person can be tzedek and humble, And yet, be naras yaminecha, be guided to awesome deeds by your right hand. A person can be great and be humble at the same time. It's an incredible contradiction. Never before did the world have such an idea that a person can be a king, and a great and successful king, and rule over much of the world, and be a humble person. Chitzecha shenunim, your arrows are sharp. Not only is your sword, but your arrows are sharp. Amim tavtecha, peoples are beneath you, your foe will fall, belave oivei amelech, the arrows will sink into the hearts of the foes of the king. Who are the arrows? Well, according to if we're talking about Talmid HaChachamim, the arrows are the Talmidim of the Talmid HaChachamim, the students. And the arrows are their Torah questions. They're sharp. Rebbe, I thought that Taisvis over there says this. That's an arrow that is sharp, and that's what will destroy the foes of the king. For when the Jews are learning Torah, nobody can stand before them. When the Jews are learning Torah, they are invincible. When the Jews are alert in Tyre, they are guaranteed success. In fact, the Abarbanel says an interesting thing. He says that what will happen is the Arabs and Edom, which I guess would be the Western world, will continue to fight over Yerushalayim. And eventually, they will fight themselves to death and destroy each other. And we'll be able to walk right in. Kisakha, your throne, Elohim Olam Va'ed, is from God and it's forever. Shevet Mishur, Shevet Malchusecha. And the staff, the Shevet of integrity, is the staff of your kingdom. Now I said Kisakha Elohim because Rashi says it's talking about a person here. Right, the throne of justice is for a judge, a human judge that he's talking about, who lives forever and ever. That a human judge, that the king as a human judge, will use his scepter, his staff, for integrity and for the benefit of the kingdom. So according to Rashi, they were talking about Talmid HaChachamim, that the king will use, and the Talmid HaChachamim will use their scepter for good and for justice, and it's talking about Kisakha Elohim. Let's turn the page. It says, Ahavta tzedek v'tisna rasha. You love righteousness and you hate wickedness. Alkein b'shechacha elokim elokecha shemen sasar mechaverecha. You love righteousness, you hate wickedness, and therefore Hashem has anointed you with oil to be an oil of joy from amongst your peers. Now Hashem has anointed you. It's fine if we're talking about David HaMelech. But if we're talking about Mashiach does not need to be anointed because Mashiach will be a descendant of David HaMelech. And the halacha is that the son of a king, the descendant of a king who also becomes the king, does not need to be anointed again. We only anoint a new line of kings. However, the Mefarshim explained that when Mashiach comes, Hashem will wish to make the point that this person is personally anointed by Hashem once again and will re-anoint him, if you will. And how beautiful will it be? More of it, olos, kitsios, there'll be more, and there'll be olos and kitsios, kol bigdaisecha, all of these on your garments, min hechle shein minei simchucha, and from the palaces there'll be ivory that has made you happy with all these beautiful things, these ivory, benos malachim, the daughters of kings, bikraisecha, will be your visitors, nitzva shegel imincha mechasim eifir, and the queen will stand erect in the golden jewelry of Ophir. Ophir was a place that was known for its gold and fine jewelry kind of things like that. Now, the queen will stand in her golden jewelry. Who is the queen of Mashiach? I'll give you a hint. Klal Yisrael, excellent hint. Excellent hint. So you have to have the courage of your convictions. You wanted to say it, but you weren't sure. I have to have the courage of your convictions. Yudbei, Pasuk 12, V'sis av ha-melech, and then the king will desire yaficha, your beauty. I'm sorry, yafseich, your beauty. Ki hu adonayich, he's your master, v'ishtachav ulo, and you'll bow down to him. The king will desire your beauty. Uvas tzor, and the daughter from tzor, which in English is Tyre, B'mincha panayich yechalu shirei am, will bring with beautiful gifts, has sought your favor by the wealthiest of the nation. So the gifts will be brought. When Mashiach comes, the nations of the world will support the Jews and support Klal Yisrael, and they'll be anxious to come and to show that they too want to bask in the glory of Hashem. So therefore, they're going to be bringing gifts by the wealthiest of the nations in order to seek our favor. And here we have perhaps one of the most famous lines of Tehillim. Kol kivuda bas melech panima. All the honor, all the glory of a bas melech, of a princess, Penima, is within her. V'mishpatzai zahav levusha, and her raiment is made of gold settings. It's hard to imagine any girl in Klal Yisrael that is not her, kol kavuda bas melech Penima. What exactly does it mean, Penima? So, the Rambam quotes this pasuk when he describes the basic conduct of a Bas Yisrael. And the part that's circled in the pen there, this is from the Rambam, Hilchos Ishus, Perek Yud Gimel, Halacha Yud Aleph. He says, Lefisha kol isha yesh la letzeis. A woman can go out, v'leilech, lebeis aviha, and go to her parents' house, levakor, and to visit sick people, ulebeisa oval, and she can go to a house of shiva, to be a shiva call, ulebeisa mishta, and she can go to a wedding hall for simchas, ligmol chesed, and she can go to do chesodim for people, lereisel, for her neighbors, or ligrosel, or for her relatives, kadei shivoa, and she can go to them. She shouldn't be going out in the street, just coming and going. Well, genai hu leisha, it's a disgrace for a woman. For a woman to be going out all the time, back and forth in the street, is a disgrace. And the husband should prevent his wife from doing this, should reprove her from that. Maybe she go out once a month, or kamo paim, or many paim b'chodesh. Lafiat zorach, whatever the particular need is, that's how much she should go out. She should go out no more than the need to go out is. She'ein yoifi le'isha, aleleishevet, because the real beauty, the real glory, the real shiningness of a woman is to be in her house. She'ein kasuv, because it says in the pasuk, kol kavuda bas melech panima, that all the cover, all the glory of a woman is inside. That's the Rambam's description of what David HaMelech, what the B'nai Kairach and David HaMelech are referring here to when they talk about dwelling with inside. Now, this is the kapitel here is speaking literally, of course, about Mashiach and the Talmid HaChachamim, and Klal Yisrael's waiting for Mashiach, and Klal Yisrael's respect for Talmid HaChachamim is what's going to make their gold raiments. But the deeper meaning of the pasuk Kol Kavuda Bas Melech Penima is that there's more glory inside than outside. Now, I'd like for just a moment to expand upon that a little further. It's very hard for people that grow up in a Western society to understand this concept. Because in Western society, a person's public accomplishments are everything. That's what really defines a person. If you think about the Chumash for a second, Avram Avinu and Sarah Imenu. Sarah wanted to send away Hagar and Yishmael, and Avram Avinu did not want to. Society, we would expect there to be a press conference, and Sarah Imenu to step up to the podium and say, after great discussion and debate with my esteemed husband, Mr. Avram, we've decided that Hagar and Yishmael have to go. Instead, it's Avram Avinu that deals with all of the public. Well, it's Avram Avinu that steps to the podium, so to speak. So when Hashem made people, and Hashem made the world, a person's private, day-to-day, private relationship with Hashem and internal feelings and internal actions and internal successes are what really define a person and what make a person and what Hashem considers to be important. But we have a problem, and that is we live in a world, and there are other people in the world, and there are societies in the world. Someone has to deal with going out of the house and getting all the grain and chopping it down. Someone has to go to the town meeting and decide whether or not we're going to build the aqueduct on the left side or the aqueduct on the right side. Someone has to go out and deal with the more public and more external side of things. Hashem chose men for that role, not as a reward, but as something that they would have to bear that would be a bad thing. It's a bad thing to have to deal publicly. A person's public, non-private life, a person's public life, it's a shanda to have to expose yourself to the public. A person is supposed to live for their relationship with Hashem, not for their relationship with their business or their relationship with their hobbies, their relationship with anything external dealing with the rest of the world. Somebody asked you. So when we say kol kavud abas melech panina, all the kavod of abas melech is, it's not just talking about women, even though that's how we use it today to teach women about tzniut, it's talking about people, it's talking about Klal Yisrael. Kol kavud abas melech panima means that all of the honorable glory is about what you do privately between you and Hashem. Fine, someone has to deal with the public. Someone has to go out. And sometimes everybody has to go out. So the Rambam says, a person has to go out. They have to. There's a mitzvah of bikur chaylim. It's hard to do bikur chaylim if you don't ever leave your house. Maybe you could just arrange all the chaylim to come to your house. That would be convenient. You know, you call up the Bikur Chayilim Society and tell them, listen, I don't really want to go out. So if you don't mind, person has to go to a base level. There's a mitzvah to be Menachem level. There's a mitzvah to do kibbut av v'ein. So unless every person ever born in the world is going to live in one house, eventually someone's parents are going to live in a different house than them. So a person has to go out to do kibbut av v'ein. But I'm saying, you know what? You go out letzarech. So says David HaMelech, Kol kavud abas melech panima. Klal Yisrael is working on themselves and waiting for Mashiach and looking for Mashiach and looking to Talmid HaChacham and focusing on what's important, which is the panim. Vayter, Pasuk Tezvav. Pasuk 15, Lerakamos, in beautiful clothes, Tuval HaMelech shall be brought to the king. Klal Yisrael will be brought to Mashiach. Vesulus acharaha re'asaha, that the maidens of her train and her companions and friends, muvoas lach, will also be led to you. Now, who are these people? Who are the Vesulus and the re'asaha, the companions? These are the nations of the world. The nations of the world will also be brought to Hashem. We say every day, Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad is what we want. It can only be once all of the other nations of the world see Mashiach and realize what they've been missing. For nobody could see that and not realize, you know what? Wow, we Umas Ha'Olam, we missed the boat. So now they're like Besulas, like new maidens coming to Mashiach and coming to Hashem, starting all over again. Tuvalna b'smachos v'gil. They're brought with gladness, with simcha, and gil, with joy. And tevoena b'heichal melech. And they'll enter the palace of the king. They'll be happy to do it. Tachas avosecha yiyuvanecha. Succeeding your fathers will be your sons. Shiseimu l'sarim b'chol ha'aretz. And you'll appoint them leaders throughout the land. As kira shimcha b'chol dor v'dor, and I will have your name be remembered in all generations. I'll call amim on all the peoples, and on the final page, all the peoples, yehoducha le'olam v'ed, will acknowledge you forever and ever. Now this is, it's almost kedai just to go back and look at every single word, because the B'nai Kairach here, you know, when we think of the name Kairach, we don't have pleasant memories associated with it. But the B'nai Kairach had a nevuah here in a Ruach HaKadosh. The language is beautiful of what they're describing. They're describing Kohanim in their white garments, bringing korbanos. They're describing the respect for Mashiach, for Hashem, for the Talmid HaChachamim, the fulfillment of everything in the entire world. You know, if there's anything that knew, anybody that knew about focusing on what's important, it was the B'nai Karach. I mean, the B'nai Karach were sitting on, it's hard to picture. The earth opens up, all the people fall through, they get caught on a ledge. All the people fall through, and they, and the B'nai Karach look down and they see the fires of Gehenna. At that moment, when they had the Nevuah, they had such a clarity of thought. You know, Rabbi Rubin points out, people can only hold so much information at a time. Right? The human brain, for however much it can or can't hold, and whether we use all of its capacity, part of its capacity, it can only hold a certain amount of information, for lack of a better word, at one time. He said, that concept is really more than that. A person can only hold a certain amount of anything at one time. A certain amount of focus, a certain amount of desire, a certain amount of ruchli. A person can only have a certain amount of things at one time. It's impossible to be thinking of every possible thing that you need to think about at one time. It's impossible to even file away all the things you need to think about. A person only has a certain amount of capacity in themselves to absorb things that they need to think about, to focus on, to shtal on. So he says, you know what happens? We get full. We let things creep in that we don't really need, and they take up X percentage of our space. And he said, it's a zero-sum game. There's only a certain amount of space a person has inside of them. And when we let things creep in, and when we let things become the focus that really aren't that important, that really aren't the tachlis of the world, and that really aren't something that after 120 years we'll really care about, we're taking away room that could be used for something else. Pardon? Yes, we're taking away room for that. And so when you're dealing with whatever thing you're dealing with, whether it's a job or whether it's thinking thoughts about something or whether it's concern about something, whatever emotion it is, whatever thought it is, the question is, after 120 years, is what I'm occupying my being with right now really going to be important? The B'nai Karach understood that almost better than anybody in history. And they wrote this capital to tell you, look out to the future. We have been given Ruach HaKodesh. Most people don't get Ruach HaKodesh. Very few people get Ruach HaKodesh. But we have Ruach HaKodesh, and we're writing to tell you, look at the future. Look what they'll be. Look at the descriptions that they give here. The Benos Malachim are your visitors. The queen stands in her golden jewelry. This is what to be looking for, they said. Forget this stuff, our father. Also, he has more covet. He has more covet. I'm occupied with this. I'm occupied with that. You got to get past that, say the B'nai Karach. You got to fill up yourself with only things that will matter after 120 years. There's not enough room for everything. The B'nai Karach says we wasted so much by filling ourselves up with things that weren't important. Would we have this covet? And would we do this? And would it be organized like this? And how would the Shvatim have? Like, you know what? We want the B'nai Yisrael to be fulfilling the descriptions in his Pesukim, at the standing at the right in their golden jewelry of Ophir. That's what we have to focus on. That's the lesson of this capital. Every capital has a certain Yisayid that it was made to be focused on. And sometimes we have a beautiful description here, as we have, of respect for Talmid HaChachamim, and a beautiful description of the time of Mashiach. And the question is, okay, that's beautiful. And when we say Tehillim and we get to this capital, it'll be very beautiful. And we'll be moved by how beautiful the description is. What's it tell us? Okay, that's very nice. So did they write this down because it was beautiful? You know, there's a lot of beautiful words written in the world. The David HaMelech is putting this in here because the B'nai Karach are saying, you know what, you only have a certain amount of room to fill up. You're a vessel. If you fill up with things that'll go towards these Pesukim, you'll be much happier than if you worry about kavod, and if you worry about gashmis, and if you worry about all the different things that can distract and detract from what you should be worrying about. That's the point that the B'nai Karach are trying to make. And I was ashamed we should be able to internalize that point.
Oh, right.